The following program contains language of a frank and explicit nature. Viewer discretion is advised.
Back to episode 56 of Radio Suju here on the nothing.com network. I am joined by the ever-present Alicia, and this week we have a different Richard. It's Richard Farley, live from his cave, his underground bunker in the Pacific Northwest, ready to wax philosophic and launch plenty of inside jokes on us, aren't you, Richard?
Probably. I think one of my goals today is just try to stay in the moment a little bit more than I usually do. Cause usually I go off on my little rants and, get a little bit esoteric or a little bit full of myself. I think I want to engage with you and Alicia today, Zach. That's my goal.
That kind of scares me, honestly, but we'll see how it works.
Yeah, I don't
out.
Know about that.
Yeah. I don't know how to think. I don't know how to feel about that.
See, I usually tease Alicia about having intimacy issues because anytime you try to have a real personal conversation with her, she'll always think of some excuse to avoid that conversation.
Well, let's I'm a little be bit fair. Worried about who would really want to have a personal conversation with you, Richard?
It happens all the time. What are you talking about?
I try to have personal conversations with you when I saw you, and you were just hiding in the corner of the bar writing.
Okay.
On the computer.
Admittedly, when I'm doing my job, it's probably not the best time to connect with me on a
but
personal
you know,
level.
But
we were out at the
knew,
bar drinking.
That's how I knew
that's
who
that's
it was.
Job
though.
Time.
But that's the nature of my job, though.
That's true. You did, wait, so, we did bond very well at that wonderfully high schoolish galazzo party. AO
was
party.
Great. Yeah, we
Can
talked
we
about this last
AO
time.
Party again?
We're not going back into it. We've covered that's covered ground.
Yes.
Any exciting events in anyone's life from the week before we get into the football?
Just living in my box.
How is your box living going, by the way?
You know, it's raining here, and it's really windy.
She's temporarily homeless until she can move into her new place, so we've been joking that she's living on the streets in a box.
Okay.
She actually has a box.
It's not a joke.
Yeah, because I think living in my box is a euphemism for female masturbation.
No. Hey, now.
No?
This show's on a roll.
I don't know, but given who said that, that's the first place I went.
That would be where you would go with that.
That would be where you would go with that. That's why I thought about that. Hey, Alicia, what are you doing? I'm living in my box. Okay, I'll come back in 20 minutes.
Already people are mashing the stop button as fast as they possibly can. Actually, they'll be mashing the stop button tomorrow if they listen to our special episode when I attempt to interview Ted Westervelt.
Alicia, are you mashing anything right now?
I'm not mashing anything right now. Okay.
She's mashing the unfollow. She's mashing the unfollow button of you on Twitter.
She's made her
I'm
own
I'm trying
choices.
To figure out how to disconnect from Skype right now.
Run away!
That'd be really rude. I feel bad for Zach in that scenario. We would probably just start over.
Or we
just
give up
just
and go home.
Shortest episode ever.
Shortest episode. Well, I think it might be. Yeah, that would be a record, like 5 minutes maybe at max.
How long was the manifesto episode?
About 10 to 12 minute range, I think.
Went by quickly.
Yeah, well, me talking by myself tends to fly by. I mean, I'm that exciting to listen to. So,
Okay. Well, I've derailed the show enough, guys. Sorry about that.
All right, yeah, let's move on. This week in the world of football, otherwise known as headlines, let's find out what's happening around the globe with our reporter, Alicia.
Off to England.
Anything to declare?
Yeah.
Don't go to England.
Teams get relegated for a number of reasons, not just shitty play. One of those reasons is failure to pay off debts. Thurrock FC, a low-level English club, has been relegated by the FA for such a debt that was only £16. Last season, the team fielded a player who owed money to his former team, and as a result, the team's Thurrock's punishment is that they are going to be docked 3 points. They had missed relegation by only 1 point last season and will now drop because of the 3 docked points. And,
so much for her writing out the headline notes herself, helping
out really well
with the presentation here.
Oh, here we go. I found my place again. I just can't read is the problem.
I found my place again.
Didn't that teach reading in Montana schools?
No. Actually, I went to school in Virginia, so...
Oh, that explains it, though.
Yeah, that explains it right there. Okay. So, see, the problem was this started to get kind of mathy, and I got confused, so, you know.
This is not a calculator in your cardboard box, I guess, is there?
No, there's not. The batteries died on my calculator.
Bummer.
And...
Do you have one of those big ones like you had, like the scientific ones in college that had the big screens and you could like program stuff into it and cheat on tests by putting answers
into graphing,
it?
Yeah, the graphing calculators.
Yeah.
Yeah. Totally.
Anyways, yeah, back to the story.
So back to the awesome team story.
Team got relegated because they didn't pay what basically amounts to about $24.
American. And the best part was that the player didn't know about the fine because he was in prison.
Sweet. This is like This story is like a country song. It has a little bit of everything. You know, a good country song has like trains, trucks, mama, murder, all those kind of things. This is like a good football story because we've got jail, relegation, fines, and unaware. I mean, it's got it all. I mean, I'm trying to think like what extra bonus level you could add to this to make it more interesting.
Well, and he owed the fines because the old team that he had been playing for folded, so each of the players for the team had to pay fines for that team folding. So there's your extra layer.
I never knew the players had to pay for a team folding.
Well, I mean, I guess when you're down that low of a level, it said that they had to pay fines, which equaled out to each player having to pay about £16, which he didn't get the memo because he was in prison.
Bummer, man. That's a hell of a way to get relegated.
Yeah.
You'd think there would be some way to appeal that. I mean, considering all the circumstances involved.
I believe it said that they were going to appeal it, but I don't think it's a very hopeful appeal.
They have to go to the Court of Arbitration for Sport, which is so dumb because we hear about all these other things going to the Court of Arbitration for Sport, like drug tests and, the stuff that was happening in France earlier this year where they're forcing Monaco to actually operate within France itself. That's something that... an issue that could go to the Court of Arbitration for Sports. Now you have a semi-pro league talking about a $24 fine that's going to go to Switzerland and go before this panel of judges.
How much does doing that cost compared to the fine? I mean, I know it's worth it because I'm sure there's a financial boon for them to not be back down in the lower league. Even at low leagues, there's something.
I wonder.
But geez, yeah. I mean, how wonderfully FA is this?
I don't know. This is just so weird because, like Alicia said, they're getting relegated based on a point deduction, based on the fact that they essentially had an illegal player who was banned because he didn't pay a fine. I mean, there's a lot of little things here. And of course, he didn't pay the fine because he didn't know about the fine because he was in jail. And so it seems like the $16 thing is kind of a red herring here for a lot of other steps that got missed in the process. Like if Turok had done their research and know that they were fielding an illegal player, would they be in this situation? If they had just paid the fee and they had checked the league's website, which is what the league is saying, like all of your fees are posted to our website and you never checked it. If they had done that, would they still be in the league? Or if they were a better team and weren't, 1 point above relegation, they would still be in the league.
God damn it, Richard. You and your logical facts here. And I want to make the FA to be like this shadowy evil organization, like the Court of Owls or something. And you have to go and use your logical, they didn't check the fine website. Come on.
We don't need logical facts around here.
God, facts ruin the fun. Don't you know that?
It does, but I just find it a little bit ludicrous that people are taking this. What is this? Like the seventh tier of English soccer?
Yeah, so like a best semi-pro kind of thing. I mean,
yeah, it's definitely semi-pro.
This is a team that if you're pretty good at playing in your adult league, you might have a chance to play on this team, kind of level.
Right. So I mean, we're just basically patronizing these soccer players a little bit, which is fine. I mean, you know, if soccer players
were made to be patronized,
and if they're taking this so seriously that they're going to go to the court of arbitration for sport, then we can make fun of them a little bit. But if they're willing to take this to the court of arbitration for sport, if they have that level of organization, why couldn't you just pay the £16?
I don't see why the FA would just let them pay it.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe it's a conspiracy. Maybe the FA's out to get them.
Court of Owls, I'm telling you. Total Court of Owls. All right.
Wow.
Next headline.
Off to Qatar.
You're as cold as ice. You're willing to sacrifice our love. You never take.
In an attempt to increase security during the 2022 World Cup, the charming nation of Qatar has ordered 118 Leopard tanks and 16 tank howitzers from Germany, all in the name of safety.
What are they going to do with them? Does the story say?
No, they're for safety. They're to keep people safe when they go there.
Nothing makes me feel safe like a tank.
Yeah.
They're probably actually there to repress homosexuals. I would think that would be their main goal because,
oh my gosh,
that's a very Qatar thing to do.
I can't even imagine how, like, Qatar is a really small place. Would you say 118 tanks?
They could probably secure their entire border with that many tanks.
And I don't even know what a tank howitzer is. What is that?
A big ass gun, I think.
Okay.
It's a big tank gun.
Yeah.
Okay.
The big thing, it's like, this is, like, honestly, you could probably invade Qatar with 62 tanks and 24 howitzers and have a pretty decent shot. I don't know what their military is like. Have a pretty decent shot of at least making some kind of impact. That's probably more, like, operational equipment than, like, the Republican Guard had the first time we invaded Iraq back in, like, the 90s.
Jeez.
But, I mean, it's an insane amount of firepower for security.
Yeah, it seems like they're almost using the World Cup as an excuse for something else. Like, this is the first of a bunch of military purchases all in the name of the World Cup. And they're just using that as like a veil.
Qatar's World Cup bit is actually a secret bit of subterfuge to build up the most powerful army in the world, take over the globe.
Unfortunately, that's the best story that we have surrounding this right now. That's the best kind of excuse that we can come up with for why, you know, triple digits worth of tanks are needed.
Yeah, I can't think of. I mean, good God, did they see what happened in Brazil and think that's going to happen there? I mean.
Part of what the article said, though, was that after seeing what happened in Brazil, they decided to order these tanks.
I thought they had their people well under control. And I'm not trying to be ridiculous. They're a much tighter run society. I guess Arab Spring type thing could break out. But, if anybody's going to rise up in Qatar, it's going to be all of the basically the quasi-slave labor they're going to use to build the stadiums. Maybe that's what it's for. Maybe it's to keep them all in their, like, shanty camps while they're building their...
To build the stadiums.
Massive stadiums and floating clouds and air conditioning for the Winter World Cup because Sepp Blatter's dumbass wants to move it to the winter.
Crisis? Yes. What is a crisis?
The evil minds that plot destruction. Sorcerer of death's construction.
Who runs FIFA? Because Sepp Blatter doesn't. Because they're not going to move it. Surely they're not going to. Because you have to grind every major European league to a stop for at least 3 to 4 months to pull it off. Or you would have to play a World Cup without all the best players in the world because they wouldn't be able to go because they're playing for their country or their club. I mean, it's a logistical nightmare. And then they're wondering why we're playing it in the middle of the desert. It's like what was it? Sam Kinison with the whole thing about people in the desert, you know, move where the food is. You know, it's like, don't.
And we were driving out here today across the desert, and it occurred to us there wouldn't be world hunger if you people would live where the food is! This is sand. Yeah. It's sand. You know it's going to be 100 years from now, huh? It's going to be sand!
You know, we get, you know, you're playing Woke Up in the Desert. Move it out of the desert.
Obviously, they're going to need the leagues to sign on to this, but I don't think it's so far-fetched that over the next, 9 years, that at some point they can get the different confederations to sign on to a hiatus between January 2021 and mid-February 2022.
Yeah, but that would just suck.
There's a long enough period of time they can make it happen, but it's kind of asinine.
But here's the thing. Okay, forget just league games. That screws the Champions League and Europa League potentially. Well, they
would just have to start a month earlier on the other end. Basically.
Well, they can't because they already start in June for qualifiers. They can't move it any farther back.
Well, there's for the Europa League qualifiers and the Champions League qualifiers, there are huge gaps in the calendar where they don't actually have.
There are so they can gaps. God, but it'd be more congested.
But they could probably move it to where.
Congestion.
But they could move it, part of it to where they do it when the World Cup would have been held, couldn't they?
But then the problem is then there's no time before the next season starts. And then you have the problem of Fisher congestion to the point where you're going to have to shorten the season. But when you do that, you can't play everybody home and away, which means some teams potentially get more home games than other, or you've got to not even play. I know I'm really arguing semantics here, but there's like, it's not just convincing the leagues to say, okay, we'll do it. There is tons of issues to deal with. I mean, the idea of reorganizing an entire European club football schedule, both at the club levels, and that's just not just the top levels. This would affect championships, League Ones, League Twos. I mean, it would be a massive, massive undertaking to pull this off to the point where I don't think even if they could, it would be worth it because what are the networks going to have paid billions of dollars to broadcast it and they're going to lose because you're going to have to, I mean, if you don't shorten the season, you're going to be playing games two to three games a week the entire season. And then if you do shorten the season, you're going to be losing revenue for the gates. You're going to be losing TV games, which means you're losing revenue there. I mean, I know FIFA's a massively powerful organization, but the idea of trying to move it just does not make sense in my eyes. And maybe I'm overreacting to it, but I just don't see how it's possible.
I don't think it's that complicated. If you wanted to carve out 7 weeks in the European winter, all you would have to do is take 3 of those weeks and add them to the beginning of the season, 4 weeks and add it to the end. I think that it's, as long as you know far enough ahead of time, the scheduling isn't really that big a deal. But I think it's a bigger issue as to whether the leagues themselves would have a will to actually do that.
Why should they? What do they care? I mean, most of the coaches and the teams hate international football as it is anyways. Yeah. Because all they do is take their best players and injure them.
Yeah, I don't think that they would have a will to do it. I just don't think the actual organizational aspect of this would be the big thing. I would think that the European Club Association and UEFA wouldn't have much of an incentive to actually shift the schedule. I think that's the bigger obstacle.
I don't know if FIFA would be willing to give up enough money to be able to make them do it. Because the only way you can do it essentially is just throw money at them. And if you, to the point where you throw enough and they say, okay, but that cuts into FIFA's profits and God forbid that happens. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's a long way away. We're talking about something that's tentatively scheduled for 2022 and it's 2013, but
right.
We have to think about it and we're going to keep talking about it because it's a controversial idea and it just stems back. Forget about buying the World Cup and all the other things you can say about Qatar. Just the idea of playing it in a desert in the summer. You just get like the feeling that nobody ever stopped to think about this. And they got so dollar signs got so big in their eyes, the money that was being thrown at them by Qatar, they mm-hmm. never even stopped to think, how is this going to work? Which mm-hmm. doesn't surprise me at all. I mean,
well, to me, I want them to make this work because if you don't make this work, there are tons of countries in the world that all of a sudden can never host a World Cup just based on climate alone. I would like them to figure out a system whereby, depending on where the host nation is, the World Cup could be at any time of year, and there are just a set of rules and guidelines that go into place as to how different leagues are asked to adjust.
Not me, because I'm so club over country, I don't want people fucking with my club football. I love watching club football. I watch international football, and I despise it the entire time. And I do it, like if I get an assignment from SB Nation to do a game, I'll do it. But I don't go out for joy and kicks and shits and giggles and watch international football. I mean, I loathe it. And the idea for me personally of being able to shift the World Cup around at will and completely screw with club schedules, I hate that idea. But that's me. I could be off base, but.
Yeah, for me, I don't like the idea of whole sets of people around the world, just based on weather, not being able to have a World Cup if they wanted it. I mean, 50 years from now, if India embraces the World Cup or embraces soccer, they're just precluded from having a World Cup based on, climate concerns. I think ideally, given how much people in the world love the World Cup, a love that I don't share, like you, I don't really care that much about it. But enough people around the world do care about it to where it seems like we should be a little bit flexible with this.
Meh. Blow it all up and destroy it. International football sucks. Next headline.
England.
Something magical in the air at Fulham. Fans moonwalking.
There is a potential problem at Craven's Cottage, home of Fulham Football Club, and more importantly, home of a statue of Michael Jackson. Had Khan recently purchased the team from Mohammed Al-Fayed, who had put up the statue of the pop icon. Apparently, some people who live in the area don't like the statue, and Khan was asked during a press conference if he was going to keep it. I have been owner less than a day. We have to preserve and respect history, but we have to move forward. I'll reflect on it and listen to the fans, then decide. However, Al-Fayed is very serious about his statue of Michael Jackson and insists that Khan can't get rid of it. Al-Fayed even turned to Khan and told him that he'd better not get rid of the statue, telling him that Michael Jackson will stay. It's part of the deal. Are you listening to me about Michael Jackson? You promise now? Otherwise, I will take your mustache off.
Yeah, if you didn't know, there's a Michael Jackson statue outside of Craven Cottage because the former owner was a big Michael Jackson fan.
I didn't know until this story came out, and then I looked at pictures of it, and it's probably the ugliest statue I've ever seen in my life.
It's not like the ugly statue, it's Michael Jackson. That's just creepy.
Well,
I am dedicated to the dream, if I ever have a kid, of going over there and having his picture taken next to the Michael Jackson statue, just for the irony.
And it's not just a Michael Jackson statue. It looks like if Michael Jackson were made into a Muppet and then put into the movie Dark Crystal.
Isn't that how he always looked anyways?
I think saying Michael Jackson always looked any particular way is a little bit wrong.
By the end, like he was pretty slick looking, like when he was badass in like the 80s, but
it looks like they're trying to, you know, the statue is trying to capture the Pepsi generation Michael, cause it has the glove. It has the glove and the kind of
like the Moonwalker time. Yeah.
Like Captain EO time.
Oh God.
All I got out of this story was, why aren't there pictures of Clint Dempsey with the Michael Jackson statue?
Because he's a smart man and he's staying far away from it.
I don't believe that. I believe they exist somewhere.
Yeah, it's like a really bad wax museum thing of him. Mm-hmm. It's just an ugly statue.
It's pretty bad.
I mean, if I'm the new owner, I just kind of wait a little bit and then one night accidentally take it down and have it disappear.
No, then he'll take his mustache off.
He's got to catch him first. Yeah. Have a mustache duel. Pistols at 20 paces.
I'm under the impression that Fulham fans have come to like this. I mean, there was a huge uproar when this thing was erected, but now it seems like Fulham supporters, some of them, have embraced this.
Well, it's kind of its own little extra fun thing about the stadium is this random Michael Jackson statue. I can see where that would go.
Yay, we have a statue of an alleged pedophile outside our stadium. That's exactly what I want to be on board with.
They're British. What do you expect, Zach? You know,
I'm leaving that comment alone. You're on your own there.
I don't think British people are any more or less pro Michael Jackson than we are over here.
I don't really know. I don't know their thoughts on Michael Jackson and was surprised about the statue.
If he's going to go with like the Michael Jackson statue, he should have gone with like a statue of like from the, like recreated the cover of history. And that was like that powerful Jet Michael pose. I mean, not like this goofy, like, I don't know what he was doing, cartoonish thing, whatever. But
did they play Michael Jackson in the stadium?
I have no idea.
I don't know. I doubt that they play any music.
Well, like at halftime, a lot of stadiums, or before the game, stadiums will play music.
Don't they do that over there? They do that here.
Yeah, they do.
I've never been to Craven Cottage, but I can't remember.
I feel like every single, like, cause if you ever watch Fox Soccer to Go when they had it, the feeds were basically the raw satellite feeds of the games. So they'd have like open, they just had the feed on for like 5 minutes or so before the announcers started. And virtually every stadium always had some kind of like top 40 pop music on.
Well, I guess I don't remember that, but I don't doubt it either. I mean, you definitely have, you know, at Anfield, they'll play "You Never Walk Alone." You'll never walk alone.
No, I've heard Carly Rae Jepsen playing at the Bernabeu. So,
well,
if they're playing that crap there, they're playing something at Craven Cottage.
Yeah, you might be right. I'm just trying to remember last time I was over there. I didn't go to any Premier League sites, but I went to the Valley, which is where Charlton plays, and there wasn't any music there.
Well, maybe Charlton's not cool. All right.
I know Charlton's not cool.
Michael Jackson statue. Will it stay or will it go? Next headline.
Let's head off to England. A wave of anger has swept through Southampton fans after a video emerged of a couple of Portsmouth fans planting a Pompeii shirt within the walls of the Saints' new training complex, which is currently under construction. The video shows the builders hanging a Portsmouth shirt and scarf inside the plasterboard in an office in the new two-story pavilion that's being built alongside the training pitch. As a, quote, nice little surprise for the scum should they ever decide to take the wall down. Because, of course, by videoing it and posting it online, they'll have a really hard time ever finding out where it is.
Yeah, these two complex. Idiots. I mean, this has happened before. There was reports of, actually at Yankee Stadium, somebody buried a Red Sox jersey somewhere in the new Yankee Stadium, and they dug out a bunch of concrete to find it. So this is like a classic.
I thought they were looking for Jimmy Hoffa when they did that.
Well, they may have been, but they found a Red Sox jersey. But if you're gonna do this, you can't put the video online. You just can't, because you're just making it easy for him to find it. And especially if you're going to do it, wait until at least the construction's
done. I'd wait
till
it was finished. Yeah,
yeah, so they're going to have to tear out a wall or something. Don't do it where it's still easy to get to it. I mean, think ahead, guys. Come on now.
And honestly, who gives a shit? Who gives a shit if there's one shirt in this multi-ton building that's been erected?
They don't want that dirty.
Sports fans, that's who.
They don't want that dirty filth in their training complex.
They're superstitious people.
As far as I'm concerned, throw any garbage that you want to get rid of down there. I mean, landfill's filling up. We're having trouble recycling stuff. Just throw a whole bunch of crap in there before we pour
the bunk. Why are you such a bunny hugger tonight, Farley?
What do you mean bunny hugger? I don't even know what the hell that even means.
What does that mean?
Bunny hugger.
I mean, he wants everyone to get the World Cup, and there's landfills filling up all over Mother Nature.
Just took a big shit on all soccer fans, basically. Jesus Christ. I just think that if you are channeling your energy into trying to figure out how to get a Southampton shirt into Pompey's new stadium, then
training ground.
Oh, it's a training ground. Training ground. Regardless, you are a waste. Period.
I disagree. I think you're fine for doing it. I think you're a waste for being stupid enough to put the video up that soon. So, Richard and I will disagree on that point.
Oh my God. I'd totally do it, but I don't think that's a surprise to anyone.
Richard, you just don't know how to have fun when it comes to being a sports fan. This is how sports fans are supposed to behave. Irrationally, stupidly, superstitiously. That's part of being a sports fan. It's fun.
It is no secret that I am not actually a sports fan at all.
You are such a sports writer, it's not even funny.
Well, it's not even that I like cool shit to happen, and I really don't give a fuck who it happens to. So I have no allegiance whatsoever. And to me, tossing a shirt into a huge hole in the ground that's going to be filled up with concrete is not fun.
Rawr. Angry Richard. Rawr.
I don't know. Maybe I need to adjust what I think is fun, but maybe if there was some alcohol involved, I'd think differently.
The problem is you're just too sober, Farley.
That's too sober.
Just too sober.
That's not something you hear me accused of often.
All right. Well, that does it for headlines. We spent way more time on it than I expected, but that whole World Cup discussion broke out. That's okay. So we're going to take a quick break, and we will be back to get into some exciting topics, including Edinson Cavani's stupid transfer. Not stupid in the sense of moving, but stupid in the sense of the money. Angry Rooney. An EPL question, and quick hit on Dempsey possibly leaving Spurs. Whether or not that's true, and would it be a good move? Plus, this week in the world of football history, or this week in football history, and listener questions. Lots to do still here on Radio Studio. We'll be right back.
I know.
back again on Radio Suju, Alicia,
wow.
And Richard. I know, sorry about that. I'm on a roll.
Feeling the love.
Yeah, I'm just not doing well tonight. You know, I'm struggling a little bit, but I'm trying. I'm doing my best. Plenty of exciting topics to cover. We'll start with Edinson Cavani making his move from Napoli to Paris Saint-Germain. he'd been linked with almost everybody at this point, by this time. Real Madrid at one point, Chelsea, and other places, but he decides to go to Paris Saint-Germain as they continue their arms race with Monaco, who of course have signed the likes of Falcao and James Rodriguez and Joao Moutinho, I believe, and who knows who else. They went out and they spent 64 million euros on Edinson Cavani. I don't know if that includes the $10 million a year or something contract or not, but, you know.
No, I think that's just the, the trigger, the buyout. Even though that's, yeah.
Yeah. So 64 million euros. Just a little scale for you. Bayern Munich made less money for winning the Champions League than that. And I have no problem with the free market economy and teams being able to spend what they want, even if it gets absurd. But the idea of spending $64 million for one guy, I mean, Everton could probably build a team that could potentially win the Premier League for $64 million with the right coach. Right. There's teams that don't spend that in payroll or in total transfers over like multiple seasons.
And that's only part of the commitment here because that's just the transfer fee. I can't remember if this was a 4 or 5 year deal, but if it's a 5 year deal at the wages that you cited, and then in France, they have super high taxes on these earners that the clubs pay. So when you hear 10 million euro for Cavani, that's after taxes for him, and Paris Saint-Germain is paying the taxes. You're talking about something close to a $270 million commitment they've made here.
For one player.
That's insane.
And I don't care how good of a player it is. I mean, here's what's crazy. Barcelona spent less to get Neymar. And while Cavani is a hell of a player, and I like him a lot, and I think he's going to do just fine, I mean, Neymar is considered one of the best young players in the entire world. Now, granted, Neymar has more to prove in terms of playing on the European stage. He's got to prove it. Cavani has proven he can score in Europe, but that's just an absurd amount of money to spend on one guy. And the scary thing is PSG has spent a ton of money on other players. I mean, how much did they spend for Thiago? And how much did they spend for, I mean, just to Napoli alone in a couple of years, they've spent over $100 million bringing in Lavezzi and Cavani from Napoli. Two guys over $100 million. And we've talked about this before, Richard, about how out of whack the transfer market is getting or how we were concerned. Right. About where it was going, this is just strikes another blow to that concern. Because if you continue, like we've said, to have a couple teams that can do this and not blink, it's going to throw everything completely asunder. Because this isn't a number that maybe Monaco could match, but even Real Madrid probably couldn't match it. At least they shouldn't. Barcelona probably wouldn't match it. Chelsea wouldn't probably match it. Bayern Munich probably wouldn't match it if they could. I mean, those are the couple teams that may be able to pull out a $64 million transfer, but most of them would not do it.
No, the whole reason he's in Paris is because these other teams wouldn't do it. There's no way PSG was Edinson Cavani's number one pick here. But he had a release clause, so it's not like Napoli just elected to sell to PSG. And at some point, these other teams said, well, we're not going to allocate that much money to this person. And it sounds like the big holdup was the wages, really, because those are huge wages. But what makes this even more interesting is that PSG has Zlatan Ibrahimovic. They have Ezequiel Lavezzi. They have Kevin Gamero. They have players that can play this position. So there's a certain gluttony involved here, you can see it as a prestige buy that they don't need Cavani. I think that
they're planning to move some other guys along, which they may be smart. I mean, a guy like Zlatan might move on.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, but it's a stunning, stunning amount of money to be paying to one guy. And I mean, I'm trying to pull up some numbers, so you guys can stall for me while I'm doing it. But I mean, the only guy I know for sure that is making more money than Cavani will be is Lionel Messi, who's making, I think, around $15 million a year.
In wages?
Something like that. I got to look and see. I'm trying to pull the numbers here.
So Rooney's making that much. Samuel Eto'o is also making that much also. We always forget about him because he's been in Russia for 2 years now, but he's also making that much. And then Zlatan's close to this. I just can't remember the exact number that he's making. So there are a couple people, and I'm pretty sure Ronaldo's around 8 million euro. I don't know. I'm just kind of pulling those out of my head at this point. But there was another transfer that happened today with PSG where they bought a 19-year-old left back from Lille named Lucas Digne, who went to PSG for $19.4 million. This is somebody that's started for the last year and a half at Lille. He's very highly regarded, was just the starting left back for France's Youth World Cup team. But they paid more for him than Barcelona paid for Jordi Alba last year when Jordi Alba was the starting left back for Spain at the European Championships. And not only that, they're giving him wages at 4 million euros per year, which, I mean, just to put that in perspective, that would be one of the highest wage earners in Italy. I wish I could give a number that would say that, but yeah, but in Italy, almost nobody's making over 5 million euros a year at this point. So that gives you some perspective, some other perspective on what PSG are doing. Whereas Edinson Cavani, he had all of these other clubs after him. What PSG did today is basically went to Lille and said, well, name your price for this 19-year-old French left back that we just want. And they just said yes, essentially. At some point, it was just too much money for Lille to turn down.
Okay, here's some wages that are reported, and I'm going, it's on foxsports.com, so I'm going to assume there's some level of truth to this, I hope.
Mm-hmm.
Samuel Eto'o reportedly making 28.8 million per season from Anzi, mm-hmm. which is stupid money, but we knew it was ridiculous. Let's see, Ibrahimovic apparently is 17 million per year.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know where these fit as far as terms of tax and otherwise. I don't know if these are with the team taxes or not.
Mm-hmm.
But that's another number.
I know Zlatan's is after tax.
Yeah, let's see.
That's the only way he rolls.
Like Ronaldinho, between wages and endorsements, makes about 24 million.
Mm-hmm.
Kaká, 25 million, but that's wages and endorsements. Like Messi's making 32 million a year on endorsements and wages. But like I said, I've read he's somewhere between around 15. I think Ronaldo's somewhere around 10, 11 now. I mean, It's not unheard of money is the point, but it's just an astounding amount. And once again, another just reminder of how dangerously close we're getting to the point where you're going to have a handful of teams that can compete for the best players. And it's just you're going to start to bottleneck out everybody. And I think it's going to hurt club football in the long run if something isn't done. Now, I don't know what to do. It's not as simple as saying salary cap or something like that. It isn't going to work that way. And maybe it'll be these multi-billionaires getting out of the sport eventually. I don't know. We'll find out. But just another step in the path that we've talked about before concerning wages and transfer fees. Just getting completely insane. But let's jump over to real quick to Wayne Rooney is angry. And here's why old Wayno is angry. David Moyes, the new head coach at Manchester United, had made a statement that said, overall, my thought on Wayne is that if for any reason we had an injury to Robin van Persie, we're going to need him. I want as many options as possible. Apparently Rooney took this thing, say is he was a second option for United. Mm-hmm. And then United's executive vice president, Ed Woodward, says there's no contract renewals that are being discussed. I am not sitting down with any player or on an extension. There's no trigger date in the diary. Would we be afraid to run a contract down? Of course not. So you have the coach and an executive basically kind of giving Rooney the hint that they don't really care about his contract and they don't really care about him being a first choice. Rooney, of course, being Rooney, has gone nuts and gotten upset. And basically seems like he's done everything but put in a transfer request. I think it might make sense for Rooney to move, but I don't know who would want him and who would take him. There's been a lot of rumblings that Chelsea might be interested.
Yeah, and there was a report just a couple of hours before we went on air that Arsenal has renewed their interest in Rooney. So even crazier than somebody wanting Wayne Rooney at his wages, and we just listed off a bunch of numbers, Wayne Rooney is making £15 million a year, so that's huge. Not only is it crazy that somebody would want that Chelsea reportedly has offered £20 million as a fee, but maybe two teams want it. That's just amazing to me because if I were Manchester United, I would just want the guy off of my payroll. Now, Manchester United clearly doesn't feel that way, but at some point they can do something better with that £15 million per year than give it to Wayne Rooney.
Yeah, I would think so. Alicia, any thoughts on old little angry Rooney?
Well, I don't blame him for wanting to leave. I mean, why would you want to stay if you're going to be the second option when you obviously have the ability to be a first option at most any other team that you would go to? It's kind of it's a little ridiculous. I feel like it's a little shitty on their part. I mean, I don't blame them. for making him their second, but
I don't know why Chelsea would want him. I mean, I don't know if Mourinho just likes him for some reason, but I feel like they have a lot better options already than anything he can give you, especially at that wage rate.
Yeah.
It's weird. For Chelsea's style, he doesn't seem to fit, because you could make the argument that if he came in right now, that Rooney would start in the middle of whatever 4-3-3, 4-2-3-1 base system that Mourinho would have, and he would be wide. You would have Mata and Hazard, and they would move around as those type of players do, and you could see that working on some level, but it's just not the type of center forward Jose Mourinho has ever built around, and so that's what's a little weird about it.
And you've already got guys like Lukaku and other young talents there, that why would you want to, you know, if you're committed to really them being the future and those guys playing,
mm-hmm.
play them. I mean, unless you honestly feel you can't win with them, which I think would be a little, I don't think Mourinho thinks that. I mean, I don't know. Maybe this is Mourinho playing, you know, he loves head games. Maybe there's an ulterior motive for him to this. I don't know what his thoughts are. I just don't see why anyone would want Rooney, because A, he's not really a likable character. And I don't see how either Chelsea or Arsenal fans would really embrace the idea of having him on their club. I think Arsenal could probably use him more than Chelsea could. And, you know, the one place, but here's the funny thing is there's two places that could probably afford those. Whatever he goes, if he goes anywhere, he's going to have to lessen his wages. I don't know if he'd be willing to do that. And then you have also the issue of the only two teams that could probably pay those wages are PSG and Monaco. And I don't think either of them want him, though. Wouldn't it be funny if he ended up in Paris?
I think he would be better served to leave the EPL, though. I mean, I don't know that any outside of those two teams anyone could afford him, but I think he would probably do better, to get out of the EPL and go somewhere else. I just don't see him playing for another EPL team with any sort of success that he's had in the past.
But I don't necessarily see him being very successful outside of the EPL. I mean, am I crazy to think that, Richard? That I don't know that Rooney would be necessarily as effective, however effective he is, if he went to, let's say, France or Spain or Germany.
I think he'd be I think he'd be fine. I think we just would have to adjust our expectations. I think Germany would be kind of a weird fit, mostly because there really is no club there that would pay his wages. But even if he were to get into a Bayern team or a Borussia Dortmund team, I think it would work just based on the fact that he has an innate skill set and he would have talent around him. I think in France, the style of the game is somewhat similar to the Premier League, except for it's not quite as fast. But as far as the actual physicality and the tactics are concerned, so I think he'd be fine there. Spain would be a weird fit, but I mean, he would go to one of the top two teams in Spain, so he would be facing weaker competition most of the time anyway, so it would probably look good. But when we're talking about teams he can go to, as far as teams that can actually afford his wages, you're talking about Chelsea and Manchester City, you're talking about Monaco and PSG, you're talking about Real Madrid and Barcelona, and then a team like Angie. And that's it.
Yeah, maybe. And City, maybe City just plunked down $25 million for Alvaro Negredo.
So, I think City's still buying, though. I think they are too, but I don't think
that they, you know, they got rid of Tevez, brought in Negredo, so that's a one for one,
right?
And I don't know. Manuel Pellegrini does not strike me as a coach that really needs or wants a Rooney type player. I think he's going more for style and speed and youth to a certain extent. And I don't know that Rooney is going to fit into the system he wants to play there.
And yeah, I like the Stevan Jovetic connection a little bit more.
Yeah, I think a Jovetic makes more sense for City, but we'll see if they can pull that trend. I'd rather see him stay at Fiorentina, because I think Fiorentina can take a serious crack at Serie A this year.
Right. But I don't think there's any way United sells to City. I think they could sell to Arsenal and they could sell to Chelsea. Now, if I were United, I would absolutely sell Wayne Rooney to anybody in the Premier League that wants to give me money, because it's the same logic that we talked about with Lewandowski one of the previous times I was on the show. You might as well take your enemy's money, because if they're intent on spending it, you might as well have it in your hands. I mean, if you're Manchester United, I just think it's better to sell Wayne Rooney to City and take the money that they would otherwise give Fiorentina and put it in your pocket.
It may make more sense. I think he should, as crazy as it sounds, I think he should work out a deal and go back to Everton. Just finish his career there. Because you know
that's
what?
Because you're an Everton fan.
Well, no, it's not because I'm Everton. It's because Everton could use him. The fans, all the shtick they've given him, they would still love to have him back, most of them. But the money just doesn't work. There's no way that they could figure out how to do the wage thing in terms of maybe United helping him with it a little bit, but there's no way they could crank out enough transfer money for United to do it, unless United just basically gave him away. And why would you? I think he's still a movable commodity at this point in his career.
Yeah, clearly.
Sam asked about an EPL-related question. He asked, with three new coaches leading three of the top five teams in EPL this season, what do you see? Do you see it being a wide open table for the top eight or so? Also, which new coaches will have the biggest struggle? Real quick from me, I think it is very wide open because you're having not only new coaches, but new styles and new players, and there's not a clear cut favorite anymore because you just don't know how things are going to react. I think if you got to really throw out a clear cut favorite, just from what I've seen so far, I go with Chelsea just because Mourinho, I like Mourinho. That team's in pretty good shape. He's going to bolster it in the right places, and I think they may hit the ground running quickest. As far as the biggest struggle, no question for me, it's David Moyes. I mean, he's following Ferguson. He's got a team that is still very good but was rickety at times last season despite the fact they won the league and looked vulnerable at times. And they haven't been able to bring in anybody of note yet because it doesn't seem like with Ferguson there gone that people want to come there as much so mm-hmm. far. And Moyes hasn't convinced anybody. He lost out on Thiago being the biggest one. And he's got a fight with Rooney now. I mean, it's kind of messy there.
I completely agree with that. United has nowhere to go but down. And I also think that the hires that their two chief rivals for the title made are just really good hires. We all know what Jose Mourinho can do. I'm a very big fan of Manuel Pellegrini. I think that both of those clubs make huge gains on Manchester United just purely by the fact that Ferguson is not at Manchester United anymore. But if I were to look a little bit farther down the table, I do wonder how Mark Hughes is going to do at Stoke City. He obviously did not do well at Queen's Park Rangers, and now he's inheriting a side that is a very specific and non-diverse side as far as their skill sets are concerned. We all have heard before about the style of play that Tony Pulis had there, and I just don't think that's a really good club to inherit if you're somebody coming into a job. Of course, Mark Hughes needed to take any job he could, so that's the one I would look if you're looking like farther down the table.
I think you got to keep – I mean, I'm homerific as hell, but you got to keep an eye on Everton because if guys buy into Roberto Martinez, he's made a couple of astute signings. He's bringing in some good players. There's still some more movement to be done, especially if they move Fellaini and or Baines and are able to get that money.
Yeah,
he's doing some good things there, and it's not panic buys, it's not necessity buys. He's furring up the roster, and for the first time going into a season as an Everton fan, I feel like they actually have some depth already, and that's an astounding feeling.
I will say this though, I don't see there being another team, maybe besides Liverpool, that can crack that top five that we've seen for the last couple years, and mostly because I just don't see anybody from that top five really allowing somebody to close the gap. I think that Spurs are going to be better. Obviously, they went out and got Paulinho. I think that's good. They'll be a little bit healthier this year, especially if somebody like Yunus Kabul can play more this year. I think that Arsenal's going to be better because they have more money to buy. City's going to be better. Chelsea's going to be better. And while Manchester United is not going to be better, there certainly was a huge gap between first and sixth, so I don't think they're going to be the team that anybody catches. And I just don't see any other team being good enough to track them down. And the only reason I say Liverpool is because they did play so much better in the second half of last year, but at the same time, if they lose Suarez, we basically have to reevaluate them entirely.
Yeah. All right. Well, we've been boxing out Alicia unintentionally here, so let's move on to Clint Dempsey talk real quick. And since Alicia is our resident national team expert, because I don't pay much attention, and you know, Richard may do, but we're gonna go with Alicia. Clint Dempsey was rumored to be being shopped by Tottenham. His agent has come out and said that that's not the case. But the question I kind of want to pose for you, Alicia, is as a national team fan, and obviously Clint Dempsey is an important part of this team and will be an important part of this World Cup cycle, would you rather see him go somewhere where he can play, or would you like him to stay at Spurs just because he's going to be playing at a bigger club and bigger potential games?
I'd like to see him get more playing time. I think as far as national team goes, he doesn't get enough playing time. When he is on the field, he plays really well for Spurs and works well with the team that they have in place. But I think he does better when he has more consistent playing time, when he's playing full games instead of coming in as a substitute. I don't know what the best team for him to go to would be, because in order for him to get more playing time, he's probably going to have to go to a team that isn't as good. If he goes to any of the top teams, he's not going to be a starter.
Yeah, he has to go back to mid-table.
Yeah.
To start. He had to go to an Everton, back to a Fulham, a Stoke, one of those teams where he's going to be guaranteed to be a first choice guy week in, week out.
And I think Everton is about the only team that has the potential to be good enough for him to consider going there. Plus Tim Howard's there. Because I don't think he would, Stoke is a disaster and that would just be awful. I don't think he would fit in very well at Stoke at all. He's not going to go back to Fulham because that's where he came from. I don't think he would go back to where he came from.
I think if he's going to move, he would absolutely consider moving back to Fulham, mostly because
you think he would?
He wouldn't have to move his family. And if he's moving to get more playing time, they love him at Fulham. He's had success under Martin Yole. He liked it there. He doesn't have to move his family.
Isn't that saying you made a mistake, though, by leaving? Aren't you kind of coming back with your
If he doesn't want to admit he makes a mistake, he should just stay at Tottenham, period. There's no better – if you're going to move from Tottenham, he's obviously not going to move up. And any move away, Fulham is just as good an option as any.
Yeah, if his ego is to the point where he does not want to admit he made a mistake, then he'll stay at Spurs. If he realizes that he doesn't care and he just for the good of his career he needs to play, then it would make sense to move.
I mean, staying in London, allowing his family and his kids not to be uprooted and go somewhere else is important to Dempsey. Is it important enough to pass up an opportunity if, say, Liverpool came coming? I'm not sure. But to me, if playing time is such an issue, especially ahead of the World Cup, a one-year loan back to Fulham seems to make sense. And then after the World Cup is over, he can return to Spurs, fight for playing time. And if he loses out on that playing time, it's the beginning of a World Cup cycle, so it's not quite as important. But if he is definitely wanting to move purely for playing time purposes, a one-year loan to Fulham seems to be the best solution.
Or you can go to West Ham.
He would be – he might be more willing to do that without having to move the family.
I think it'd be smartest to loan him out. Move. I don't see him playing very much. Mm-hmm. When he did play, he had flashes where he was good and he did score some goals. But there were also games where he looked atrocious. So I don't know. It's hard to say for sure what the best move is for him. But I mean, this realistically is probably his last World Cup cycle where he's a prominent part of the American team. So I'm sure he's going to want to try to be at his best. So we'll see how that plays out as well. All right, real quick, this week in football history, before we get to questions, on July 15th, 1952, Yugoslavia opened the Olympics with a then record 10-1 win over India. So yeah, India played in the Olympics in 1952. There you go. Yugoslavia came to the tournament as contenders, having won the silver in 1948, and the tournament was in Helsinki. And they smashed, like I said, India with then record win. They later outdid it with a 10-0 victory over Venezuela in 1972. They took silver again in that Olympic tournament, finishing second to mighty Hungary, who we've mentioned before. Hungary was one of the world powers in football during that time. And they did finally win a gold medal in 1960, if you were curious, after yet another second place finish in 1956. So there you go, a little Olympic history for you. But lots of questions to dive into. We'll try to move through these quickly because we've been going for about an hour and we don't want to wear your ears out here, but we want to make sure we answer our listener questions because we love you listeners. At Commodore Clyde starts us out. Has Alicia decided what kind of underpass she'll be living under?
I did. And I went there the other day and there was a homeless man already living there.
Kick his ass and take over.
I'm still trying to find the perfect underpass because, I don't share well.
All right.
That seemed a little creepy. So,
Commodore Clyde also asked, and we'll pose this for you, Richard. Will the MLS All-Star Game ever go away? Do you see MLS creating its own version of a Community Shield type match?
So, first question, it'll go away when it stops getting television coverage, when it stops getting corporate support, when it stops selling out every time, and when it stops getting big clubs to come. So it's not going away anytime soon. And regarding the Community Shield match, I think that's something, if there's demand for it, that MLS would have no problem doing. So I think if enough fans want that, they would have no problem having a high-profile exhibition to kick off the season.
Make it Open Cup winner versus MLS Cup winner? Or Supporter Shield winner versus MLS Cup winner, if it was...
Something like that. But I don't think there would... Even if it's not even a full exhibition, I think they would be open to the idea of tailoring the schedule. So that's always the first game of the season.
Yeah, you could even make it a league game and just make it your opener on like Thursday night or whatever, Saturday night or whatever, your opening game being the previous year's MLS Cup and Supporters Shield winner or Open Cup or something like that. I think that could be an interesting way to play it.
MLS is very responsive to stuff like this. If there's enough fan demand for it, they will look into it.
Yeah. And that might be an interesting way to start the season. I'm excited about it.
I mean, whoever suggested this is genius.
I actually kind of like that idea. Kind of like play on it, even like you said, even if it's not exhibition, you make it the opener. I think that could be fun. So, something interesting. If you're listening to MLS, there you go. There's a good idea for you. Don't say I ever did anything nice for you. At Muffin Top Model, did Don Garbage select Yedlin because he wanted someone in the Pacific Northwest watching the All-Star game? Probably to an extent. He probably wanted a player or two from that area, to be there. You know, some people would dog the idea of Yedlin getting picked. I get it to a certain extent. He is a little sketchy 1v1 defending, but he's young. But there's no doubt. I mean, he's, 20 years old and has stepped in and started for the Sounders and been a regular and been very good and been very effective. And they are a better team with him playing. Mm-hmm. And you can make a case that he's been one of the best right backs in the league, I think. So I have no problem with this selection, especially if you want to get somebody from every team. If you got to pick a guy from the Sounders right now, he's probably one of the best ones. I mean, the Sounders have been very, very up and down. And as far as when he's been there and been playing, Yedlin's been very good. So I'm okay with that pick. But I'm sure there's some kind of little bit of we want to make sure Seattle's watching to it. Sure.
Yeah.
At Jeff Ball 99 asks, and we'll give this to Alicia. Please, please commentary on this abomination. And did you look at the picture he linked?
I did, and that hat is god awful, and he should never ever wear it again.
What hat? What are you talking about?
It was a picture.
Alien Head was wearing a straw fedora.
It looks like something an old man would wear golfing, like you know the straw hats that they wear.
It's all lopsided and off center and like dented.
And it kind of looks like someone might have run over it with a tractor first.
Yeah, it looks like
it
looks like it's been in a closet and he's like, oh, I need a hat real quick and just grabbed it.
My dad has had straw hats run over by the tractor before and they kind of look like that by
the time. That's
the
greatest line ever on our show. My dad has had straw hats run over by the tractor before.
I think it's the combination of the hat and the suit though. That's real. Like if he was just wearing
he doesn't have a tie on though. I mean, he's cash. He's got the top button undone. He's ready to party.
So, yeah, that's a rough hat. The Ginge Ninja. Who would win in a fight between Alicia and the Ginge? Zach has weight on his side, but Alicia seems to have a disregard for her own health. Tail of the tape, Richard. You've met us both.
I know
what
this
do you
seems
think?
Fun in theory to think about this, but Alicia would be, not even a challenge. The second that she did something to piss off Zach would just – mildly hurt her once in a non-bruising way, and then Alicia would cry and run away.
I mean, just kick her crutch out from underneath there.
it seems interesting, but once you meet both these people, it's just not that interesting.
Any response, Alicia?
You guys are sorely, sorely mistaken. I would take both of you out.
I'm pretty sure Alicia would kick my ass, but
I'm pretty sure she would only if you let her, and I don't think that's the premise to this guy's question. I think he's really asking if you tried to fight her, who would win? And it's just, Alicia's the least threatening person ever. I mean, the idea that she has disregard for her own health is not true at all.
She does have a pair of American flag shorts that, you know how Michael Jackson would always wear that like cut piece over the front, over his crotch area? Like it has, the fabric looks like it has the Michael Jackson crotch piece on it. So anybody who wears that is dangerous in my opinion.
I mean, the funny thing about Alicia is that when you meet her in person, none of the stuff you hear on the show really can be taken seriously anymore. So this idea of this badassness that she has, or just it's not like that anymore. She's just a normal person. She's very kind of self-conscious and sensitive.
I am not normal. I don't know what you're talking about, Farley.
That's exactly what a normal person would say. So I don't know.
Normal people don't live in boxes, okay?
You're not living in a box though. See, that's the thing.
I totally am. You don't get it. I am.
No, I don't get this character they are trying to portray, while at the same time trying to sound authentic, of course. So,
all right. So, how did you say that Twitter name? She's your friend, Alicia.
I fell at KOs.
Ask, the husband wants to know if a soccer player ever transitioned to MMA. If not, they should try. They would have great cardio. Yeah. Okay. You're right. But have you ever seen soccer players try to fight? That's all I'm going to say about that.
He asked me this question because they kick a lot and they run around a lot. So they have really good cardio and they kick a lot. So from that perspective, they would be really good. They'd get their faces pummeled in, but they do really good on the kicking and cardio portion of MMA.
All right. That's fair enough.
This is why I don't watch soccer with my friends. Okay. This is the result.
Oh my. At Mendez FC, I must have missed the memo. How serious am I supposed to take the Gold Cup? Oh, and if the answer to my question involves the Confederations Cup, my rebuttal is, how seriously am I supposed to take the Confederations Cup? I will briefly say before I give this to Richard, take the Gold Cup more seriously because at least the Gold Cup doesn't eventually count for something, especially now that they changed it to where this year's winner and the winner of the next one will play in a turn playoff for the Confederations Cup spot. So, well, I just blew my own argument up by saying that holders are doing this is to get into the Confederations Cup, which is meaningless. The Gold Cup, to a certain extent, at least counts for something, I guess. I don't know. Am I wrong, Richard? Should we just discount both?
It's hard for somebody to say that they shouldn't take the Gold Cup seriously when their actual team that they're supporting is taking it somewhat seriously. And granted, Mexico, the United States, to a certain extent, some of the other countries have not called in their full teams. They're still taking this seriously, and they'll take the next one even more seriously. So I would say,
especially if they don't win this one, they'll
exactly
take the next one even more seriously.
So I would say, if you're somebody that just wants to know the most about your national team, if you're somebody that wants to know how these next people who could be called in are actually playing, then you should probably take this Gold Cup somewhat seriously.
All right, so there you go. There's your answer. Next question comes from at Cannibalism. Can Monaco do the unthinkable and go from promoted to champions? And has that ever been done before? Also, can Alicia pronounce the names of 5 Monaco players? We'll start with that, Alicia. I put 5 Monaco player names there right for you to go after. Go for it. See what you can
You're
do.
You're an asshat for typing those in right now.
Go Is that one of the names? You're an asshat?
Yep. Torre, Falco, and those are the only ones I'm going to try and read.
Falco. He's not an Austrian synth pop rap star. Falcao is his name.
No.
Falcao.
No.
Torre, yes. Sebastian, Obadi, I think, is the other. And then Ishmael Mirin. There you go. Richard.
Yes.
Can they do the unthinkable and go from promoted to champions?
Well, I don't have any names that pop into my mind, but I know going from promoted to champions has happened before. It happens less often now than it has in the past, but it has happened in history before. Now, can they do the unthinkable and go from promoted to champions? Probably, but I would say that Paris Saint-Germain is a big favorite in France, and everybody in France is kind of expecting Monaco to finish second this year and then have a year of consolidation.
All right, fair enough. And I will say about Monaco, the thing that it's going to be a struggle for them is that while they have gone on added big name guys, Falcao and James Rodriguez and Moutinho and so a little bit of depth in a guy like Eric Abidal, they still don't have a goalkeeper that you think is probably going to be a guy that's top level enough. There's some questions about the defense. There's some holes in the midfield because a lot of this roster is still guys that came up from the promoted team.
Right.
And so there's still some holes to fill, and I don't know how much more they're going to add and spend. I'm sure they will end up adding some more. But there's a lot of questions. Go ahead.
No, they also have a coach that never, ever wins titles. Claudio Ranieri never wins, always finishes second place.
So there you go. Claudio Ranieri, Mr. Second Place, which, you know, that's been a shot against him. We'll see. You know, maybe he can break it, but I don't think it's going to happen only because I think PSG is just too good top to bottom. And it's just, it's not at the point where they're going to be completely ready to go. And, you know, maybe, just maybe, that they'll be able to do it, but I just don't see it being a likely possibility.
I don't even think their team is really that great yet. So that's just me.
Yep. As far as if a team has ever done that before, I don't know. Probably. But if it does, it's been a while and it's back in the dark ages. Now, someone may prove me wrong and say, oh, that happened 2 years ago and I didn't realize it. So if somebody out there knows, let us know. We'll talk about it on the next show. But off the top of my head, I don't know for sure. Final question. Sheldrick from Facebook asked, the 2016 Copa America is scheduled to be in the U.S. and will include Mexico. 6 qualifying CONCACAF teams in the U.S. Do you see CONCACAF and CONMEBOL becoming one confederation? Let me start off by saying that this is not confirmed yet. They have tentatively talked about doing it, but nothing has been put in stone yet. This is, I think, the 100th anniversary of the Copa America, and they'd like to play it in America for the exposure. They'd like to involve it, but this isn't for sure. So we don't know if it's going to happen. So it's kind of hard to talk about it yet as far as from that standpoint. But just the general idea of the two federations merging, I don't see it ever happening for a variety of reasons. Most importantly, because it would be absolute suicide by Mexico and the United States to do that. Because I can make a case that the U.S. would never qualify for a World Cup again if they had to fight through teams like Brazil, Argentina, Uruguay, Colombia, Chile, and others. I don't see them being able to stand up, and I don't even know if Mexico could stand up to that on a consistent basis. I think it would be absolute suicide. And plus, you have a lot of the small countries that can really control CONCACAF, that the way the system's been rigged there to where they get one little teeny tiny island gets equal voting shares as the U.S., essentially. So I don't see that ever happening. I could be wrong. Richard, any possibility of that happening?
Regarding the CONCACAF CONMEBOL thing, I just don't even see why this keeps coming up. When you talked about it a little bit, but when you go through all of the nations in both of the confederations, how many nations would actually vote yes to do this? So an infinitesimal number would actually say this is a good idea
this. You think about the travel involved. Think about I mean, if you're Brazil, you're Argentina, you're those, and your teams, forget about them. They probably don't care as much. But think about the teams that get into the World Cup consistently from CONMEBOL down at the mid-level point. And do you think they want to have to deal with the U.S. and Mexico and the travel involved? Because it's just another team that's going to get in their way potentially. No, absolutely not. This does not make any sense to me at all. And I don't, like you said, like Richard said, I don't know why it keeps coming up, because I don't think it's ever going to happen. Nor would I really want it to see it happen, honestly.
Mm-hmm. Agree.
What about you, Alicia? You want to see it happen?
No, I think it's a terrible idea.
Right, because you like the U.S. making the World Cup, right? Like most
damn
U.S.
right.
fans?
Absolutely. I want to go to the World Cup. We're going to Brazil, man.
Ain't. Oh, God. Yeah, congratulations. All right, so that's our show. We've covered it all. We've argued about fun stuff, and we've managed to box out Alicia way too much. So we'll work on that going
forward. Sorry, Alicia.
Richard and I get going. Yeah. You know how it is. Remember, as always, follow us on Twitter and Facebook. You've continued to give us some Facebook likes. Things will slow down a little bit, but we appreciate everyone that has found the show. We're up to 106 likes. Go us on Facebook. So, Alicia is clearly kicking my butt at that attempt to try to increase our social media footprint. So congratulations.
Yay.
All right. And remember, you can find us all different places, on Twitter at Radio Suju, on Facebook.com/Radio Suju, Google Plus, search Radio Suju, call the rant line, 713-36-GIN, 713-364-4643, email us show at RadioSuju.com, go to our website, RadioSuju.com. Yeah, all good times. And tomorrow, which will be Friday when you're listening to this, if all goes well and my computer doesn't explode or just it devolves into nonsense, a second show will be out this week, featuring the an interview with the controversial Ted, who is soccer reform. I know a lot of people have told me they refuse to listen to that show, and I respect that decision. But what I'm going to try to do is actually have a conversation with the guy and not just turn it into one of his Twitter rants where he's yelling and screaming and is grandstanding. I actually kind of want to talk to him and try to see what his motivations are, what he's trying to do, and what his end game is, and does he think he's making an impact, and try to get something interesting out of him. So we'll see how it goes. It could be a disaster. It could end up being something that's fairly interesting. So be on the lookout for that if you're interested. If not, I understand. But nonetheless, thank you for listening to the regular show, because we didn't want to completely cut you guys off of your content that you know and love this week. So that's enough. I'm rambling. For Alicia, for Richard Farley, thank you, Richard, for coming on the show, by the way.
Oh, thank you for inviting me. Thanks, Alicia.
Anytime.
All right, so for Alicia, for Richard, be well, SB Nation, be well, listeners.